Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Gates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. After the Packers get a 30-13 win over the Seattle Seahawks here in Seattle, moving to 10-4 on the season. And, you know, there's obviously, once again, some plenty of things that we can run through and just talk about through this game. And I can just open up with getting, you know, both the your guys' thoughts. You can kind of say it was a tale of two halves after a dominant first half. I'll start with you, Ryan. Just, you know, what were your general observations and takeaways from win number 10 on the year for the Packers?
You know, what a weird night. You know, I heard something tonight that I didn't think I'd ever hear inside Lumen Field in Seattle, and that's go Pack go chants. You know, that was unexpected. The best they played all night was when the Seahawks had their starting quarterback in the game. Then they lost Geno Smith and Sam Howell came in and Packers played their worst they did all night. This is a team that's 10-4 and a spoon. You've rightly mentioned how they haven't had a signature win against any team. They need to beat more good teams. Seahawks came in not only with a 4-game win streak, but knowing that they had to win to stay in the current playoff picture. With this loss tonight, the Seahawks went from leading the NFC West to now they're 8. They're on the outside looking in because they don't have the head-to-head tiebreaker, 8-6 against the Rams. This is a good win in a hostile environment, go Pack, go chance aside. And they did it comfortably, 30-13. It was never within double digits after the first two drives. This team has a way of leaving you wanting more. And I think that we know how good this team is and certainly how good it can be. But I also get the feeling that if they have this tendency of playing with their food instead of just devouring what's on the table in front of them. They did that again tonight. It's a phenomenon that happens almost every week. And if that continues, this team that is good enough to take on any team in the NFC, you look at the roster, the talent on paper, could be a short abbreviated playoff run. I don't know where this season's heading other than to the playoffs. And from there, it could go really big, really long, or really not. I don't know.
Tom, what about for you? Just general observations and takeaways.
Well, it was a good road win. You know, road games are often like that, you know, where you have to grind it out. You might play well sometimes. You might not play well at others. It's very rare, you know, you can go on the road and just blow someone out, especially, you know, given the Packers haven't really done that. But they are 5-1 on the road. And I think that's was the most important thing and the most significant thing is that after going on the road to Detroit and, you know, losing by 3, they came back and they came out really red hot against Seattle. And then for some reason, you know, maybe it's just because Seattle's not a bad team. You know, they are 8-5 for a reason. And they kind of made some adjustments in the second half. And you know, they kind of figured out some ways to stop the Packers. But yeah, this is what the games are probably going to look like all through the playoffs, as long as they go. I don't know if we're going to see them have a game like they did against Dallas last year. I think this is just kind of a different team than last year, and they're going to grind out games, especially with a guy like Josh Jacobs. It's just a different kind of team that way. I don't think they're going to blow anybody out. I think they can play better. There's more out there for them. But, you know, when you win on the road on the West Coast, that's always a good thing.
You know, real quick, what puzzled me is that they came out so dominant that it just looked like they could just bowl over the Seahawks team, which I did not expect. I picked the Seahawks to win tonight. I did not expect that. That was very impressive. And it just – they just kind of stopped. Like the lack of urgency to end the first half, three plays in 80 seconds, that's unforced. That's completely on them. And it didn't hurt them tonight, settling for a field goal instead of getting a touchdown at the end, which they had every opportunity to do if there weren't 4 seconds on the first half clock at the three-yard line. For no reason, but they just didn't get there in time. It didn't hurt them tonight. In the playoffs, that will. They didn't punt in the first half. And then they go punt, field goal, punt, fumble, punt, down. They just stopped. And it's not like the first time we've seen that. So that can't happen in January. That's kind of where my head's at. Like the first half, what they did tonight against a really good team on the road, they can beat anybody in this conference. They can, but it's not. You're playing with fire if you do what you did in the second half.
I mean, that is a good point. What, first half, 4 possessions, 4 scores, 2 touchdowns, one from Jacobs, 1 to Dobbs, and then you had the 2 field goals from McManus, and he had 8 possessions. What, 4 punts, a turnover on downs, a fumble, and then at the end, obviously the dagger from Romeo Dobbs kind of sealed the deal. So that's what I wanted to kind of hit on with the offense. Obviously, one thing that stood out in this game, there were some strong individual performances. And starting with the offense, I do kind of want to take a minute to talk about just the return of Romeo Dobbs and what he was able to bring to the offense. And then another guy, Christian Watson, have to say he's playing his best football of the season coming off of the bye week. He's really kind of becoming a threat in that passing game. But for you, Spoon, just first things first, just, you know, how big was the impact from Dobbs and him just kind of coming back after missing some games due to the concussion?
It was huge. And they kind of did, I don't want to say that I suggested it and Matt LaFleur listened, but they did sort of pare down how they were using guys. And, you know, I mean, Reed, Dobbs, Watson, they were the three guys who were most involved as wide receivers. Ricks's role kind of was pared down a little bit. And I think that's what they need to do. I think anytime they can get Romeo Dobbs in single coverage, I think he's going to win. Most of the time he's going to win. And he sort of showed that tonight. I think, you know, Watson's expanding his game. And then, you know, they weren't getting Reed the ball in the passing game. And then they decided, well, we'll get it to him in the running game. So that was smart. I think, you know, Dobbs can be a really, really vital part of the team, especially when you get teams a little bit nervous about Christian Watson and they start, you know, sliding safeties over that way. So it was a big game for him.
Yeah, Ryan, bouncing off that, just, you know, what did you see out there from the return from Dobbs? And, yeah, just kind of just the step that this receiving group is taking after having, you know, some ups and downs throughout the season.
Yeah, you know, Romeo Dobbs was who we know him to be. He's got the best hands on the team. That second touchdown catch was just a tremendous grab, 8 inches off the turf, diving back of the end zone. His reliability is what he brings to this Packers offense. But, you know, within, you know, paring down, as Spoon mentioned, all three of those guys bring something different. It's reliability with Dobbs. Christian Watson now, 3 straight games with a catch of at least 35 yards, 4 in his past 5 with at least a 35-yard catch. Packers have always made it very clear, even through the injuries, the inconsistent play from Christian Watson, he is a guy that they have to stick with and be patient with. And hope that he stays healthy, because he changed their offense in a way that really no one else can. When the deep threat is clicking and cooking as he has been the past 5 weeks, this is an offense that can make plays at all levels of the field. You got Josh Jacobs keeping you on schedule down in distance. You got Jordan Love, his precision, the short intermediate passing game. And then you got Christian Watson over the top. That is very hard to defend. And then Jaden Reed is a guy that you talk about all over the field in every phase, as a runner, as a decoy, as a extension of their run game with some of the quick screens that he catches. Everyone's bringing something different. So, but to me, within that, I think Christian Watson's consistency, what's becoming a trend now of hitting those deep plays with Jordan Love, that nothing's bigger than that. I mean, you got that going week in, week out. That's huge.
Very huge. Speaking of which, I do want to talk about, you know, Jordan Love. I mean, got his numbers 20 for 27, 229 yards, two touchdowns. Another game, was that four in a row without an interception? You know, he's taking care of the ball really well. What a 123.8, you know, passer rating. Tom, for you, is, you know, we've kind of talked about it throughout the season, and you've even mentioned in past podcasts that, you know, Love, he needs to have some bigger performances. Is this a little bit closer to what you were, you know, expecting, or what at least Love, you know, needs to do for this offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think saw again signs that he's starting to get back to what we saw a little bit of last year, at the end of last year. He's, you know, he's able to get out of the pocket. He's able to make some throws that, you know, still, you know, they're kind of eye-opening. Now, today I thought he missed some balls more than, you know, he started out so accurate and was, I think, like 7 for 7 or 9 for 9. I can't remember what it was. But he's completing a lot more passes. He's 20 and 27. You know, there was a lot of games where he's right around 500. And, you know, he's posted a plus 100 passer rating for the fifth straight game. So he's close to back. There's still some throws where you go, oh, yeah, he could have done a little better. He missed Romeo Doubs over the middle on what would have been a really big third down play. I'm not really sure how he missed that. One of those balls, I think it was, I can't remember, it was to Doubs or Watson. He kind of floated it down the right sideline. And I thought, you know, if he had thrown a BB there, he might have been able to get that for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. But he just looks healthy. He can run. He can move around in the pocket. He gets rid of the ball when he has to. I think he's playing a lot better.
Yeah. Ryan, are you in a similar boat, like agreeing, or just, you know, what are you seeing from Love?
I'm really tempted to say that he is back. If he's not, the difference is very slim. You know, the five straight passer ratings over 100 that Spoon mentioned, that ties his career-long streak of last year, the last four regular season games and the wild card win in Dallas. He had 12 touchdowns, no interceptions in those five games. He's got 8 touchdowns and 1 interception in these five games. So maybe not quite there, but he's essentially back, right? And I think that what we've been saying for the past couple of weeks that you still kind of got to see is, can he be efficient and still hit big plays? Well, he had a 20-yard connection to 4 different targets tonight: Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Tucker Kraft, and Josh Jacobs. He was making big plays, and I really thought this might have been his best game of the season. It wasn't his highest passer rating of the season. He had a higher passer rating, I think it was against the Dolphins. But I think that this was probably his best game of the season because he hit big plays and he just took care of the football. He missed some throws, but there weren't a lot. I mean, there was one laid over the middle to a wide open, I think it was Christian Watson, that you never want to see a guy, you know, quarterback throw laid over the middle, but he was so wide open. He short armed the throw. It really wasn't a bad decision how wide open he was. I thought it was another clean report card when it came to decision-making, hitting big plays, being efficient, finding completions. I thought it was big, too. The first two plays tonight, just finding completions, quick throws to Josh Jacobs, who has really had an evolution as a receiver out of the backfield. Early this season was fairly non-existent in the receiving game. tonight was a big part of that. So they set it up. They operated through Josh Jacobs. I think they asked very little of Jordan Love at the start, and he more than delivered. And they got him comfortable, and from there he just kind of took off and didn't hit everything, but really, really good. This is a quarterback you can win with in January.
Yeah, Spoon, I do kind of want to switch over to the defense. Obviously, you know, you can look at differences in terms of if you wanted to pick like Detroit's offense compared to Seattle's, but in terms of just being able to get off the field, getting sacks and pressure, I guess this is probably the highest number of sacks since the Tennessee Titans game, and they had takeaways, and obviously we'll dive into the individual performances like Edrin Cooper coming back, but just, I mean, what did it, you know, stand out to you when you saw just the way the defense was able to just respond a little bit better compared to, you know, how they just weren't able to get off the field in Detroit last week?
Well, they took advantage of a suspect offensive line, for one. They really got after Geno Smith. And then they played the screen passes a ton better than they did against Detroit. Detroit just killed them with those screens. And Seattle tried to do it, but they really couldn't. You know, they tried to do a lot of those quick screens, check downs, and the Packers just tackled really well. And then Edrin Cooper was just a man on a mission. He just played lights out. And, you know, if they could get Quay Walker to play like that, they would be unbelievable. I'm not saying Quay Walker can't, you know, doesn't play hard. He does, but Cooper is just a wrecking ball. And, you know, when he's moving, he's taking people out. And I thought he just brought a new energy to the team. But overall, yeah, they did not let Geno Smith throw deep to Metcalf. I mean, they did a great job on Metcalf. Keyshawn Nixon, you know, he got called for a couple penalties, but he was up in Jackson Smith Nyigba's face the entire game. I mean, he just was bothering him the entire game. And so I thought they had a pretty good game on defense.
Yeah, and same for you, Ryan. I mean, I look at so many guys. You looked at, you know, T.J. Slayton. He was out there like a guy with his hair caught on fire. Carl Brooks was active. Kingsley Enagbare was active. I mean, so many just different guys that were flying to the football. And, again, they've been a really good, you know, run defensive team. And I think with Charbonnet only had like 54 rushing yards. And we talked about just getting pressure on the quarterback. Just, you know, how, you know, and big was it just to, you know, for the defense just to respond after last week?
You know, the reason I thought that the Seahawks would win this game is because I haven't seen the Packers have a pass rush in about 84 years, and they brought it tonight. I just, without seeing it, you know, you start to wonder, is it actually there? And if they didn't have a pass rush against Geno Smith, Geno Smith is a week ago against Arizona wasn't sacked once. He completed 80% of his passes, 24-30 against the Arizona Cardinals. If they let him be comfortable, Geno Smith can pick you apart. He is efficient when he's comfortable. They never let him be comfortable all night. He was sacked three times. They ended up with 7-4 on Sam Howell. It was the most that they've had since week three when they sacked Will Levis eight times in Tennessee. Their 12 quarterback hits tied with their season high in Tennessee in week three. This was as good as the pass rushes looked all season, and this is a pass rush now that can, if they carry it into the playoffs, they can be dangerous with this pass rush. Now, that's a huge if. It's one game, and I'm still a little suspect, but I think Edrin Cooper, he did everything tonight, right? Well, he started the pass rush too. He got the first sack, and what they can, you know, I don't know where the final numbers are now in the season. I haven't updated it. But at the time, that was his third. He has 3.5 sacks this season now. Only Rashawn Gary had more at the time. I don't know if that's the case now, but that shows how much dearth there is in pass rush, and it also shows that Edrin Cooper's a factor there. And when he's back, when he's doing what he's doing tonight, it can be a different pass rush with him. So that, to me, was the entire – they brought the pass rush tonight. We've been – screaming about it. I've been screaming about it. I'm a screamer for a few weeks now. and they finally did it. They carry that into the playoffs. I don't know. It's a big if, but if they do, it could be a dangerous defense.
Spoon, did it I don't know, did it almost surprise you at all to see Cooper play the way he did, coming off three games, a hamstring? You never know how quickly you can move and just do the type of plays for a rookie in this type of situation on the road after missing some games, getting his first career interception, had sacks, like just set the tempo. Was it kind of a surprising, like, whoa, look at this guy out there? I mean, you've been on this hype train since day one, but still.
Well, yeah, I can't say that I was expecting him to play like that. But, you know, in retrospect, you know, it's for rookies, it's a really long season. And, you know, especially given they were, you know, they played their bowl game and then they were training for the combine and then they're in the offseason program. And I think at that point of the season, a 3-week break for him might have just given him the juice he needed to really make a push at the end. You know, I think a lot of those other rookies are dragging. And getting that time off, I think, might have really actually helped him quite a bit. He did look fresh. He looked faster than everybody else who was out on the field. And, you know, that's what they need. You know, they needed that kind of a push. Eventually, you know, they'll get Marshawn Lloyd back. And, you know, who knows what he could add, at least just as a change of pace. Because he's got to have fresh legs. I mean, he's got to have the freshest legs in the building. So I think sometimes for those rookies, it's not that bad to get hurt and miss a game or two.
Ryan, and also I want to ask you too, Spoon, just for a guy like Carrington Valentine, after same thing, going through the ups and downs of injuries and just trying to find some consistency on the field, just for him to be able to, you know, he's one of those guys that's kind of had to step in without Jaire Alexander getting his first career interception. And I just, you know, big for him to just almost try to, he's not going to, you could say, fill the shoes of a Jaire Alexander. There's like no corner on the team that will be able to do that. But at least giving them something, at least, you know, you would say big for that secondary.
You know, so much of tonight, I found myself still thinking, boy, they really need Jaire Alexander back, which at this point, why even – it's going to circle Minnesota on your calendar. I'd be shocked if he plays against the Saints. I think you need him healthy for Minnesota. I don't know if they beat Minnesota and Justin Jefferson without Jaire Alexander. What they have behind him is some depth that will allow you to survive, obviously, and still be 10-4, considering their top cornerback rarely plays, which not every defense and every team in the league could survive an absence like that. That is a premium asset that's not on the field. That can change seasons. I mean, that's a big deal. They have the depth to survive that. It was a nice night for Carrington Valentine. You know, he played his 1,000th career regular season snap, had his first career pick. Dropped the first one, and then they came right back at him, and he didn't drop the second. I have to think that he was so mad about dropping the first that when he caught the second, he had to run off some steam, because why he took that football out of the end zone, I have no idea. That was a choice. That was one of those where you're like, when you're 5 years old, you're thinking, you know what, one day I'm going to play in the NFL, I'm going to get an interception, and I don't care where I'm at on the field. That first interception, I am running as hard as I can toward the other goal line. Like that. That was just like years in the making or something. I have no idea why he didn't take the touchback. But it was a bit, you know, it took points off the board. It was a big play. I just think they've got a lot of depth, guys. It's quality depth behind Jaire Alexander. They do not have another Jaire Alexander, and that's still that's big. It hurt him at times for sure tonight.
Yeah, and even there was even some times in the game in that secondary, like, I mean, Evan Williams, you know, didn't really necessarily have his best game. There were some times where he got beat. But for you, Spoon, with this secondary without Jaire, at least game planning wise, is this kind of how they have to do it, just almost surviving that way? And maybe if they're fortunate, like Carrington did, maybe get a takeaway here and there?
Yeah, Carrington Valentine, I'm sure, scares the crap out of them because, you know, he'll play pretty well and then he'll blow a coverage. You know, he blew one today where he came up on a receiver and let a guy get behind him. And that happened in the Detroit game too. He was playing zone and everybody else was playing man and his guy had a big game. But then he gives you the interception. He plays hard. You know, he's physical. He gets up. I think the reason they keep playing Eric Stokes and rotating him is partially because of he's, you know, going to blow a coverage at some point. I thought Stokes played really well today. I thought Stokes was really physical and tackled really well. You know, he's learning how to play zone where he can just come up and he's so fast he can hit a guy. Now, man-to-man, that scares you. When he gets in man-to-man coverage, then it scares you. So there's two sides of the coin with those guys, and I would say they're getting what they can out of them. No, it's not the same as having Jair Alexander, but Jair Alexander gets beat too. You know, it's not like he hasn't gotten beat this season. I think, you know, I think they need to play him as soon as possible because I don't think if they can not have the Vikings game be his first game, they might be better off. You know, like if they could get him some action, you know, and maybe in a limited just to get his feet wet. I mean, at this point, who knows? I mean, I've so stopped making predictions about when he's going to be back and how much impact he can have. I have no idea. When he gets back, he'll get back. He's the biggest mystery guy there is. But yeah, they're functioning. They're functioning. You know, I mean, they were playing Metcalf, you know, JSN and Tyler Lockett. And none of those guys killed him.
There's a few things, I guess, in terms of playing devil's advocate, if you will, in terms of things that still kind of stand out that they need to work on throughout the season. I mean, it's been different things, whether we've talked about the drop passes or the penalties and all that. At least for the most part, it seemed like they've, you know, cleaned up a lot of the drops that they've had, even Wiggs and Reed. Like, they're doing a much better job of, you know, catching the football. But I guess a few things, I just try to make some notes off the top of my head that I thought about that stood out. Some of those end of the half, you know, situations or burning timeouts and still some of those penalties. I'll start with you, Ryan. And if I'm missing one, I'll please jump in as well. Are there things that still kind of jump out that is like, okay, these are some issues or maybe even on that list that jumps out to you even more that it's like, okay, you guys better be careful. Like you said, you're cooking with gas a little bit and it could burn you.
Well, it jumps out to me more than anything is that they just never play a complete four-quarter game, as Jordan Love put it, you know. It's just week in, week out. There's lulls during games where this is a team that just seems to sleepwalk through it. And then they might wake up. Like tonight, they finally did get their stamp on this game with the Romeo Doubs touchdown. But goodness, it took a hell of a long time to get there, you know. So that's what stands out to me. The end of the half that you referenced, Matt LaFleur was very self-critical, as he should have been, on how that was mismanaged at the end of the half. That's what he said. He mismanaged it. Essentially, what happened was, you know, you exit the two-minute warning thinking, no matter what, first priority, don't give the Seahawks the football again this half, right? Because you have a two-touchdown lead. The Seahawks are starting the third quarter with possession. Do not let them cut into this two-touchdown lead. That's priority. Well, they get, I think, 9 yards out of 2 minute warning. So you're kind of cooking them, right? It was a positive play. And over 80 seconds, they ran three plays and they were near midfield on the fringe of like they were in position where they were on the fringe of field goal, but like they had every right to be thinking end zone with that much time left. And they just didn't realize it. You know, Matt LaFleur said, you know, here's the thing. The Packers had two timeouts. Matt LaFleur said in hindsight he should have used them sooner, But by the time he recognized what was happening on the field, it was kind of like, well, so much time has already gone off. If I use him now, it's just it's a waste of a timeout. Surely, I think he was expecting the offense to kind of realize there needed to be urgency, and the offense didn't. Matt LaFleur also said he had some lousy play calling. For example, the one that was really bad was there was it went from like 56 seconds on the game clock to 16 seconds between one play to the next, and Matt LaFleur gave Jordan Love a play to call at the line of scrimmage based on the defense, and Jordan Love treated and operated that play with the urgency of a team that was trying to sit on a fourth quarter lead. It was just it was stunning to watch. Matt LaFleur, at the end of the day, he's got a young quarterback. Sometimes these things are going to happen. They just can't happen in January. They might not have gotten points if not for the final snap, offensive snap of the half being a 34-yard gift of a pass interference. But even that only amplifies the blunder because now you're at the 3-yard line and it's 4 seconds left. Yeah, and there's no reason for there to be 4 seconds left. It was your own doing. You could have had two or three shots from the three. They trot out their field goal team instead. Ultimately, this was fine tonight. They won 30-13. It didn't matter tonight at all. But everything from the here on out, these last three games, is viewed and should be treated by this team through the prism of you're going to the playoffs. You have a chance to really make some noise there and do something with it. That is a that's a privilege, right? That's something you've earned to have that right. But it's also something where once you have that opportunity, you have to do every single thing you can to make sure you maximize it. Things like this don't do that. So I think that's why it's important.
For you, Spoon, just from like what I mentioned earlier, is there anything in those regards that stand out to you maybe from concerns, maybe clock management or penalties or anything like that?
Stop challenging plays. Outside challenges. I mean,
0-for-6.
Just another, you know, I don't get it. I forgot to ask him about it after the game. I don't get it. And, you know, I don't know what he's seeing, what they're seeing up in the press box, but it was pretty clear that was not going to happen. That was not going to go. And so, I mean, you take your shots, save your challenges for when it's a really big play, you know, and from when it's a chance to erase a big play. If you lose on that, okay, fine. But, you know, these inconsequential challenges to me are just head scratching.
You know, Spoon, I agree with you on no challenging because I am for anything that ends the game faster in all of its forms. So I fully agree. I will say at first I had no idea why he was challenging. I was like, the arm's going forward. And then on replay, it looked close to being a sideways pass because the ball leaves the arm, the hand. It was Sam Howell, right? Mm-hmm. It leaves his hand and it hits Kenny Clark's arm. I didn't realize that until seeing the replay. And then it bounces off the arm downfield because of the velocity of it. So the angle, I thought a case could be made that it was maybe sideways. Now, ultimately, the thing about it is almost like another spot challenge. Like it was such a close camera angle that it was hard to really indisputably tell if it went sideways. But it would have been a big play if it had been overturned to a fumble, the Packers recovered. It's a takeaway play. I thought on replay it was a lot closer, but I don't ever challenge anything. I fully support that message.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought you could see his hand going forward, and anytime the hand is going forward,
you're not winning.
You know, they're going to call that a pass, and I don't know about. You know, I couldn't tell if it went off Kenny Clark's hand but, you know, they didn't really call it on the field that it was backwards. So I kind of thought, they're not going to call that. I thought it was going to be, was it a fumble or was it a pass? And once you see his hand going forward, then you know they're not going to call it a fumble. So I don't know. If I'm him, I'm really thinking hard about these challenges, you know?
Yeah. That, I know. At some, I guess at the end of the year, I do kind of want to go and look at all the challenges. Also, when they were called, I guess that one from Kid, that was in the third quarter, I believe. But then there's been other ones where it's like in the first half and just different times where it's like you're just, again, like you're just kind of burning challenges when it doesn't really have much of an impact for the game. Because, like, what was it already, 20-6 or 20-3 when that happened and your defense was playing well and they were, you know, getting pressure on the quarterback. So it's kind of like, like you said, do you really need it at that point in the game? That was kind of my question.
The only thing you'd say about that is it was a turnover play. It was a potential turnover play. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, from that standpoint, okay, I guess if there's some question, go ahead. But you know, just with this track record, you know, there shouldn't really be too many go-aheads.
They're going to have to rewire – their process. Matt LaFleur has talked about this, and I'm sure he will never share internally how they rewire things because he's not going to throw certain people under the bus. But Matt LaFleur is getting almost all of this information from upstairs. He's not all of it, but most of it. He is relying on the coaching booth to tell him when is the right time to challenge and when not. I don't question challenge, you know, the impact on the game. Any takeaway play has a huge impact on the game. What I question is there's certain plays that just don't have a high likelihood to be overturned in general. Obviously, starting with spot challenges in a scrum, never challenge those. You can't see the ball. Don't do it. Even if it's a big, I mean, you're not going to win it. This one was with the camera angle. It was similar to that. Like, there has to be an understanding of which plays are very unlikely to be overturned, period, and then save your time out, as opposed to this sort of challenge has a higher percentage chance of being overturned. That's something that should be fairly easily accessible through analytics and data. That's, you know, you want to stick in the green zone challenges that have a high chance of being overturned, away from the red zone challenges that have a low chance of being overturned. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. As we're near the end of the podcast, so any final words or final spotlights or anything from you guys that stood out? And Spoon, I'll let you go first. Maybe it could be a player or, you know, I know McManus went 3-for-3. I mean, he's continually consistent. Any other thing or anything in general you wanted to just say to wrap, as we wrap up the show?
You know, I guess – we didn't touch on Quay Walker getting hurt, which, you know, LaFleur, of course, didn't really give much of an update, but
really,
Walker looked pretty dejected when he was on the bench when he came back. You know, so I think they have a decision to make. You know, Eric Wilson, you got to like him when he's blitzing. I mean, he is really good blitzing. But you know, on some of these rundowns, I wonder if it should be Edrin Cooper and McDuffie, and one of those two guys is playing in the middle, you know, in the nickel. Because, you know, Wilson has his moments, and in certain moments he does things better than the other guys do. But they're going to be facing some, you know, physical run teams, and they're going to need maybe Cooper to play the middle.
What about for you, Ryan? Any final takeaways or thoughts from this weekend?
You know, my first reaction to Quay Walker being injured was, that's not good. Yeah, first of all, obviously, it's never good when you see an injury, but that's not good for the Packers because he's been playing decently, you know, over the past month. I think he's been playing his best ball over the past month, and the Packers have a huge amount of confidence in Quay Walker. They very much value his role, his presence on the field. But then I'm thinking, well, if he's not there, someone's got to play those snaps, and it almost forces the Packers to put Edrin Cooper on the field more. Even tonight, he didn't play a ton. I mean, not surprising, it's his first game back from a hamstring injury, but that's kind of been the MO for Andrew Cooper this season is maximizing the opportunities that he gets. If there's more snaps there, maybe the Packers benefit from having more snaps from Andrew Cooper. I mean, I think that could be a net positive in the future. But we'll have to see how it plays out.
Yeah. Cooper's got to be on the field. There's no other – it's like one of those I've seen enough moments. Like, I'm all right, I'm done. When he is playing like this, it's – you saw it's just like he had everybody. It's like he elevated the defense when his energy and his play, and it just rubbed off on all kinds of guys. So it was – like I said, it was big to see the way Rashawn Gary continues to step up. And – like I said, Kingsley and Ekbare stepped up. T.J. Slayton, Carl Brooks. Like there's so many guys. They were just very active, and you just haven't seen a lot of that. And I feel it started, like, Cooper set the tempo with that first sack. Just blew right past the old lineman and got to the quarterback.
Everyone noticed Edgerrin Cooper tonight. I mean, Jordan Love – well, first of all, Matt LaFleur in the postgame locker room, according to Jordan Love, read off Edgerrin Cooper's stats, which were 7 tackles, a sack, 2 tackles for loss, 2 quarterback hits, an interception, 2 defended passes, and 2 special teams tackles even. Like, he was doing on special teams too. Everyone noticed that. Even Jordan Love was like, he had a crazy game. And he did. He had a crazy game. So, yeah, everyone noticed what he did tonight. There needs to be more ops.
Yeah. Last but not least, Seattle was awesome, by the way. My first trip here, it was beautiful. It was like 40 degrees warmer, so it did feel like a heat wave coming from Wisconsin to here, where it was like negative whatever to this. The views were great. Space Needle was cool. The coffee was great. It was not Starbucks. It was some actual, like, local coffee. And, yeah, all in all, it was a successful trip to Seattle. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it as well. Ryan was showing me the grunge world, but saw Kurt Cobain's house and the bench, and I just sat there and act like, oh yeah, big fan, big love Nirvana, you know. I love Chris Cornell, he's the best.
I owe you a trip around Detroit's Motown sometime. You can show me around. This is my music though, so it was nice. You know, the Space Needle, like, I gotta say, first of all, you know, you forget sometimes that things are really cool. It's my first time with the Space Needle. I love it. I love it there. See how you just lit up when you got up top. It's like, oh yeah, this is actually like a spectacular view. And the look on your face when I told you to lean back on the glass for a picture, and you looked at me like I had 10 heads and all of them were green. Like, that was, you're like, man, like a coworker here, you're putting me in some precarious situations, but you know what? The glass held. You did not fall and plummet all the way to the pavement. So yeah. I knew what I was talking about.
It was great. It was going to be fun, but it was no worries for me. You know, just a little bit of death. Spoon, where did you? what did you check out in Seattle? I saw some of your pictures on social media. What were you checking out while you were here?
I went to the Pike Place Market. Every time I come here, I usually go there, and it's right on the Sound, and it's, you know, beautiful views, and then it's a fun place to just walk around.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I'm glad you guys had a great time. And
this is one of my favorite cities, like, period. And I will say, outside Lambeau Field, which I do, Lambeau Field is one part of this job that it never gets old. It's a special place. But this is my favorite NFL stadium. Is Lumen Field. I think it's a spectacular stadium. Great experience there. But this is, let's have the Packers come back to Seattle next month. I'm totally down for that.
I know. But the Seahawks, they do have some work to do. They still, you know, have Minnesota. They and plus, who knows about Geno Smith's, you know, health. So, you know, I guess
they're not in the playoffs right now. Right now they're the 8th seed. They're not in the playoffs right now. It's the Rams that if the playoffs started next week, the Packers would be going to L.A. Well,
I mean, I won't complain about that either, but whatever. Let's wrap this show up, though, guys. Again, just great work. Let's get a little bit of rest, and we'll head back to Green Bay. And we'll, you know, talk more about the Packers getting ready for the Saints They lost a close one going for two against the Washington Commanders on this Sunday. And that game will be on Monday, 2 days before Christmas, in Lambeau Field. And but for now, the Packers, again, 10-4, get a good road victory against the Seahawks. And, yeah, just one step closer to trying to put it all together before the playoffs run around or get here. So thank you all for checking out this Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominic Yates.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.